is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
The Ukraine conflict. The speeches in the United Nations. President Biden saying the world is changing and we're changing with it. President Zelensky of Ukraine telling the UN General Assembly, Ukraine's fight is the world's fight. Those two speeches inspiring. Now, what is to be done? I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired, CBS News, visiting Professor Dickinson College and CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, to comment on what we know now about Ukraine conflict. Jeff, the speeches are inspiring. They're appropriate. I believe the audience was listening carefully, but we've known over these last months that the nations are dividing into factions, and the largest faction by far is staying back from the conflict in Ukraine. How do you measure how President Biden and President Zelensky were heard yesterday in the United Nations? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. We'll have to measure the reaction over time and how it changes policy on all these world leaders. But I think you're right. The largest faction remains at least attempting to be neutral. And we saw that very clearly, John, a few weeks ago when President Biden as well traveled to the G20 summit in New Delhi. And the communique that came out of that about the war in the Ukraine did not condemn the Russian Federation for what was naked aggression. Mr. Biden's speech, I think you're right, was very inspiring. And it reminded the audience that they were a part of a collective security organization, the United Nations, which established global norms against such issues as naked aggression that violated sovereignty and territorial integrity. And Mr. Biden basically said to the audience, you know, if we allow this to occur to Ukraine, then no one in this room should feel safe, which was a reminder, I think, of what this organization was all about. Zelensky's speech also was very, as you said, John, inspiring. But I thought he was very clever in how he organized it, talking about the existential threat of nuclear weapons at the onset, which we made efforts to control and prevent that from happening. But he pointed out what the Russians are doing in this conflict is weaponizing new things, weaponizing food, which may cause famine in many parts of the world, weaponizing energy, allowing energy costs to go up, also causing great economic harm, weaponizing nuclear reactors as potential dirty bombs like at Zaporizhia, and probably most poignantly, weaponizing children and genocide, and talking about the thousands of Ukrainian children that have been basically kidnapped from their parents and families and taken to the Russia. And I think this should also fall on, hopefully, and resonate on the ears of those assembled. Certainly, he got massive applause at the end, and we'll have to see, though, over time, whether that translates into changes in policy by those respective countries. Finally, I thought, John, important to point out, Mr. Biden was speaking to the world community. Mr. Biden was speaking to the American community because of his concern about a strong streak of isolationism, which seems to be growing in the United States. And we see it in the Congress and operate in opposition to additional military aid to Ukraine.
There is dissent everywhere. And I remind myself when I read headlines such as Ukraine spy chief, we know West can give us more weapons. I remind myself that from 1942 on, there was dissent among the Allies about the way the war was fought. Russia wanted a second front as fast as possible. Roosevelt and Churchill both promised a second front, and yet were not able to deliver that until 44. So Allies fuss with each other. They battle each other. They can be very difficult, almost more difficult than the adversary sometimes. That is the way of war. So we come now to the allies of the United States. These are the committed allies, talking about a long war. They've used that term in particular. What are they telling us, Jeff? How did you hear that?
Yeah, they're definitely doing so, talking about a long war. And I thought it was ironic that at the same time Mr. Zelensky and President Biden were delivering their remarks, Secretary of Defense Austin was actually in Germany meeting with the so-called Ukrainian contact group, those countries that provide military assistance, and he was, in fact, urging them to do more. But you're also right, John, there's that great comment by Winston Churchill, the only thing worse than fighting a war with allies is fighting a war without allies because of the management issues and trying to make sure the interests continue to be coincident and not just overlapping. But I think we see some expansion along the way. In the United States, for example, we have moved, for example, from the production of around 175,000 rounds of 155 artillery ammo, critical item in this conflict, at the beginning of this war, to now at the point where in a year or so we're going to be producing 100,000 rounds of 155 artillery ammo every month. Then we've seen a further expansion on the part of our European allies. Is it to the degree that they require? No, I think because what they have not realized is that the Ukrainian war, even if successful, is not a one-off event. And unfortunately, the United States and its Western European allies are very likely to be locked into some kind of a hot or cold conflict with the Russian Federation and perhaps others for a sustained period of time. Therefore, the expansion of the industrial base to meet that longer-term challenge is actually what we're talking about.
The Abrams tanks. I saw a report, Jeff, that the M1 Abrams, I believe that's what it's called, are arriving in the battle zone. There's transfer, I understand. There's crews, there's training. We also have this report. Ukraine rejects defective lot of German tanks in second embarrassment for Berlin. This is London reporting. Serious technical issues also beset previous consignment of Leopard 1s, delivered in July. Again, I think this is normal for combat, that logistics are a many-splendored complaint and that things go wrong all the time. Now, you've dealt with artillery pieces and trucks at the front in a battle zone. Are things smooth, Jeff, or do you get bumps that that people complain about?
No, you get bumps all along the way. I mean, that's a line, of course, that strategy and tactics is for amateurs, and logistics and sustainment is professionals, proves true on a daily basis. I imagine in the case of the Leo 1s, first of all, it's a very old tank, and so there probably was some concern on the part of the Ukrainians, not only on the was it still up to it in terms of had it deteriorated over time, but was there the spare part base that, in fact, that particular piece of equipment could be sustained over time in battle, even if it wasn't battle damage, just due to normal usage? And was there a supply chain put in effect whereby those spare parts could be moved to the front rapidly to support those pieces of equipment? One's got to remember, it's not only supporting a piece of equipment, but supporting it where it is. And if you're talking about tanks, and you're talking about tanks at the front, you're talking about tanks that hopefully are moving forward. And every time they move forward, it makes that supply and resupply and sustainment problem just a little bit harder.
The concern I have also right now is with an essay from Michael Ashcroft, Lord Ashcroft, who runs a very distinguished political poll. He's a former leader in the Conservative Party. He's been to the Ukraine front four times, and he published an essay of his most recent visit to the very front lines, observing from the trench a small team combat in what I presume to be rubble. He didn't give the location in detail. The battle zone, however, was revelatory to me, Jeff, because it's dominated by drones, both sides watching each other as they move through the rubble, depending upon intelligence for any combat whatsoever. And in this instance, the small team led by a Ukrainian lieutenant was uninformed of a larger group they were attacking and took immediate casualties and retreated as fast as possible, covered by the smoke of the burning of one corpse that was their comrade moments before. It was gritty, Jeff, and very much reminding me of reports I've read about the Battle of Verdun, when the French troops or the German troops would go forward through former forts that had been reduced to rubble by the artillery fire and crawled around, sometimes within shouting distance of each other in the dark. It is not something that is promising a breakthrough momentarily. How did you read it, Jeff?
No, I think that's exactly right, John. We're talking about a very transparent battlefield. I mean, I thought it was amazing in that article, he talked about the Ukrainians flying upwards of 2,000 drones on every single day. And their ability, in many cases, I've read, to produce drones locally, which are manufactured for a few hundred dollars, either as suicide drones or to provide some level of reconnaissance. So that means movement is key and essential, because it has to be coordinated so well to avoid being seen and being struck. And every commander on the battlefield then has a requirement for, I would call, immediate situational awareness. Where is my situation in terms of my enemy and the environment? If one is not aware of situational awareness, then one's going to lose. And this is why information is so keenly important on this battlefield more than perhaps any other. And we've seen the Ukrainians adapting to that, I think. You know, in any combat, I think it was Lawrence Friedman said, or Michael Howard said one time, both armies have the doctrine wrong at the start of any war. It's the question of which one learns and adapts the more quickly that actually determines who, in fact, wins. And I think what we're seeing that going on here is the Ukrainians have found some of their offensives resulted in large-scale casualties because of this transparency problem coupled with Russian superiority in the air and perhaps artillery. And so they're using smaller groups to try to take the particular locations, depending more on information and their ability to quickly turn that information, turn it more rapidly than their Russian opponents, giving them hopefully an advantage on the battlefield.
I puzzled the vehicles on the battlefront, Jeff. There was an anecdote that Lord Ashcroft gave us of a vehicle, a soft-top vehicle, coming forward and found by Russian suicide drone and hit so that the casualties were grievous. And that suggests to me that all vehicles, not just tanks, but any vehicle whatsoever, is vulnerable in a new fashion on the battlefield, not as a breakthrough weapon, but as a target.
No, that's absolutely correct, because of the number of drones in the air. And as you can weaponize these more cheaply, then all those particular targets become attractive. You know, if you were looking at it from an artillery standpoint, a single vehicle is frankly not that much of an attractive target as you prioritize, because you've got, you know, what we call a target-rich environment. So you got to prioritize which ones you get first. But if you've got a lot of cheap drones in the air, then everything can be prioritized and hit very quickly. And furthermore, of course, even if you talk about tanks, one of the problems with a tank is the thinnest armor on a tank is on top, particularly on top of the turret or on top of the engine compartment. The bulk of the armor is around the sides because you're expecting to be hit from the front or from the side. But if you're using a suicide drone, then you can come straight down from the top and take advantage of the weakest portion of the tank to destroy it in the process. And in case of a vehicle, not only do you destroy the vehicle, but you get secondary explosions based on if it's carrying ammunition, based on the fuel capacity. That those all cause secondary explosions, which obviously makes it very catastrophic for the crew on board.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, CBS News, visiting Professor Dickinson College, CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. We turn from Ukraine conflict to the larger contest between NATO and the Russian Federation and its ally China. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.